So today we are joined by Dr. Doug Strauss to really talk about resiliency and some of the things that are in your book, Stronger. So let me read this impressive bio that I have here a little bit word for word. So if I miss anything, let me know.
Sure.
It says that you are the managing partner of Wexley Consulting since 2001. It says that you received your PhD in 1982. Should I tell you that was when I was born? Your PhD in 1982 in extensive management and operational experiences as executives of several multi-million dollar companies. It says that you've consulted for numerous companies, including Fortune 500 companies. You're the president of the CEO Club of Baltimore, which is an amazing group, by the way. I've been to it many times. And I believe the founder of AOL was actually a member of CEO Club of Baltimore.
Yeah, he was there. It's a great story. We probably need a whole separate interview for that. When I met Jim Kimsey, the founder, turned out to be the founder of AOL.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any employees at the time. So I think it's one of the greatest success stories, business success stories in American history.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. And a lot of successful people have gone through the CEO Club. So it's a great organization. And as of late, your book, Stronger, was actually ranked as one of the top best business books of the year by the American Management Association. So
yeah, we were really, really happy about that. And that really spurred sales. The book is actually in its third printing.
Is it?
And it's still selling well today. I mean, it's been out for several years now. So we're really, really happy and proud of the book.
Well, it's an amazing book. I mean, you've interviewed people for this book, people like Cal Ripken Jr., Michael Jordan, people that have tremendous success stories that have worked their way through lots of difficult times, honestly, in their lives. So I'm curious, do you have a favorite interview that you did or someone that really sticks out?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you mentioned Cal Ripken Jr., and I'll talk a little bit about that, and Dr. Ben Carson, who's just an amazing, amazing individual. Yeah. But there is one quote there in the book that I really, really like. In fact, when I give these kind of talks around the country, I usually will open up with that quote because I think it's so, so powerful. It's been a while, so let me see if I can remember it.
The test is on.
I've scored thousands and thousands of points. I've won hundreds and hundreds of games and won multiple and multiple championships. But 26 times I was asked to take the winning shot in a game. And I failed. I fail over and over and over again. And that's why I succeed. Usually have the audience right there at that point. Do you know who that was?
Oh, my gosh.
I'll put you on the spot here a little bit.
Well, let's see. Thousands of points. So obviously it's not one point at a time. It has to be someone in basketball, NBA. I give up. You got to tell me.
Michael Jordan.
Well, I even said his name and I didn't get
it. Said his name in the beginning. I mean, it's such a powerful, powerful quote. You know, when you see somebody at that level, some people say the greatest basketball player of all time.
Yeah.
And what does he focus on? How he can get better each and every game. How did he get better? And really, it's just a powerful statement.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what it's about. It's about understanding that sometimes there's going to be troubles. Sometimes there's going to be challenges, maybe even failures. And how do people get up from those? How do they react?
Well, that's really the name of the game. And, you know, another one of our favorite interviews was Cal Ripken Jr. And, you know, it's so kind of interesting because I met Cal, and I've known his brother Billy as well. Didn't interview Billy for the book, but you juxtapose one against the other. Cal is very, you know, close to the vest. And Billy shows his emotions on his sleeve. I mean, really is a dichotomy between the two. And when we interviewed Cal, you know, we talked about the situation, you know, with his father. You know, his father, after many, many years of being involved with Oriole baseball, over 30 years, came all the way up to the minors, managed at every different level, and finally he got his shot. You know, and he ended up managing Cal and Billy in the major leagues. Never been done before. One manager with two players, you know, in the major leagues. And we talked about, because very early they had that terrible losing streak where they ended up losing over 20 games.
Right.
And Cal Ripken Sr. was fired, I believe, after 12 or 13 or 14 games, started the season with losses. And I asked Cal, you know, how devastating was that? And he talked about it, and he said his first thought when he heard it, he was driving to the ballpark. I guess he heard it in the morning. And his first thought was, I got to get to Billy.
Really?
Because Billy will just go crazy in the locker room.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, Cal, again, is more reserved.
Yes.
He knew, you know, anytime you're a manager, you know, you're going to get fired at some time. Yeah. But it was really devastating for him. But just a very caring and tremendous individual. I talked about how me and my son was at his game when he broke Lou Gehrig's streak. And, you know,
Cal
even said, you know, tell me about it. How was that? And I said, it was just so powerful being there, sharing a moment like that. You know, you felt like you shared it with him.
That's
and plus
right.
You shared it with your son, a moment that you'll never, ever, ever forget.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs and business leaders have those moments in their lives too. Maybe when they hit their first major milestone as a leader or as a business owner. Some organizations, they plan for the exit, and immediately when they get that exit and they really reap the rewards of what they invested, those are all moments that people really enjoy. But there's often, like we said, a lot of struggles up until that moment.
Tremendous amount of struggles, Steve. Great, great point. You mentioned America Online earlier when we were talking initially. And Jim Kimsey was there for the initial meeting of the Baltimore, Washington CEO Club. And that's where I met him. And a lot of people don't know, it went through many iterations before it became America Online. Mm. And Jim actually owned a bar at the time down in Georgetown. And that's how he was making his living. He wasn't making a very good living. But, you know, he almost went bankrupt two or three times.
Mm.
And then he got finally hit with America Online. And like we said before, it's probably one of the greatest success stories in American history, business history. I remember when he hired Steve Case. Everybody thinks Steve Case was the founder. Steve was the first employee.
Yep, that's right.
And he actually came to a CEO club meeting. You know, it was so amazing because maybe he was in his late 20s at the time. And just to think about it, as short as 10 to 15 years later, he became Ted Turner's boss. When they acquired Time Warner. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Incredible. But, I mean, to really bring it down to local businesses, where do you think they're struggling the most? And where do you think they have to really rely on their resiliency today?
Well, the hardest thing right now today is personnel. Hmm. I mean, it's in a flux.
And staffing.
And people just can't find people. One of the things I do as a managing partner of Wexley Consulting, we help companies. We help them find people, mm-hmm. and then we do a whole intensive psychological test battery to really hone down and to see who these people are. I mean, what we find, and the literature talks about it, if you just do interviewing alone, you're probably about 60 to 65% effective in terms of an employee's success on the job. If you do interviewing along with testing, you're going to get up to 90 to 95% success rate.
Now,
let me finish one point here, because it's very, very important, because people today do not want to make a hiring mistake. And also when I give these kind of talks, and that issue comes up, I'll ask for a show of hands in that room. I'll say, raise your hand. How many people have ever made a hiring mistake? And if not every hand is up in that room, they're either lying or they just became a manager. They didn't have a chance to make that mistake. And because people don't want to make mistakes today. If you make a hiring mistake, it can cost you up to 2 to 3 times the person's annual salary, especially at the higher executive level.
Oh, wow.
And that doesn't even account for the disruption to the morale and what's going on in the organization.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you had mentioned that comprehensive testing along with interviewing needs to be done. Are you talking about like DISC testing or those types of things?
Well, I don't want to really berate or talk bad about the competition, but there's all kinds of testing out there. There's free testing out there too.
Yep.
But anytime you do a one-size-fits-all, the same test for the receptionist, the same test for the COO, or the same test for the chief executive officer, something's amiss. When we get involved with testing, we try to find out what are the competencies. We'll sit down with the hiring manager and come up, what are the competencies needed for that job? And we literally have 7 to 8 pages of competencies.
Oh, wow.
And we'll ask the hiring manager to pick out those competencies that are important for that job. And as psychologists, we have access to hundreds of different type of tests. We select those tests that measure those competencies. So it's like getting a custom-made suit.
Got it.
And, you know, again, at the highest level, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. I mean, it's one that I still remember today, even though it was several years ago. We were dealing with a $100 million financial services company, and they were getting ready to hire for a new division in Atlanta. It was going to be a $5 million investment, person's salary, the infrastructure, and the personnel needed for that office and so forth. And the CEO found at that time, he thought, Doug and Ken, my business partner, Ken Wexley, we found the perfect person for the CEO of their division in Atlanta. And they flew him up to our offices here in Baltimore because we're sort of like the last stumbling block to go through what we call an in-depth assessment plus an interview with us. And if you would have only done an interview, you would have hired the person on the spot.
Really?
I mean,
that good?
he was at a central casting for for an executive for a $100 million company. I mean, just had all the answers. Perfect. When he came back with the tests, I still remember the numbers today because they were off the charts. He scored at the 88th percentile in defensiveness, the 92nd percentile in aggressiveness,
really?
And plus he had a high need for autonomy. Well, he was going to be reporting to the COO, who was a control freak, a micromanager. They would have been at each other's throats in about 15 minutes.
I see.
You see? But we were able, you know, we don't say hire or don't hire, but you certainly can read between the lines. And to this day, the company did not hire that individual. And we usually get a hug because they know they really dodged a bullet.
Wow. So it's interesting because you mentioned that you do the scores and you don't say hire or don't hire. But a lot of those scores talk to the specific culture and the specific, I could say, behaviors of the CEO or the person in charge. So maybe that person would be a great fit for someone else, but not for this particular company.
Perfect point, Steve. Exactly. Like I said, with this particular organization, the person that individual would have been reporting to was a micromanager.
Yeah.
Micromanager has a lot of trouble with somebody with a high need for independence.
Yep.
You know, there's not a fit.
Makes sense.
And because we've worked so closely with that organization, we did executive coaching with the executives, we put in a performance management system, we put in strategic planning, we knew intimately that organization, and we knew the culture, and we knew what would be a good organizational fit.
Yeah.
And that's really what you strive for, an organizational fit.
Yeah.
And we tell the people, you know, it's the testing is for your benefit as well as the company's benefit, because you don't want to be in a company that you don't fit in. And they don't want to have an individual that person doesn't fit.
That's a good point.
So you want a good fit.
That's a really good point. And right now, it's hard to find anyone. It's hard to find great employees. It's hard to find maybe employees that aren't even a good fit. So how do you coach executives that are experiencing growth when they really don't have the labor to execute, you know, on the work? Are you recommending teaming agreements, mergers, acquisitions? I mean, what do you tell people?
Well, it's really all of the above. I mean, the key point, though, is that a company has to stick to their knitting. Hmm. When you're in a tough situation like right now with labor, I mean, there's a multiple of things you can do. And you just got to be cognizant. I mean, where are you? I mean, like we're working right now with a national manufacturing organization that's having trouble hiring people. And what they've done is, you know, they looked at all avenues. You know, they've looked at opinion leaders in certain areas and how can they garner more, in this particular case, was manufacturing employees. They found one of the people in the company was an opinion leader in their church. And I mean, it was a minority type of church. Everybody spoke Spanish. So now that president of that manufacturing company has more Spanish people in his company than regular English speaking persons, English as a second language for these people. So he's looking at all avenues. And that was an avenue that they found to get more people in that particular area. So we say, you know, stick to your knitting, stick to your plan, do whatever you can do to find the people that you're looking for. They're out there, but you got to uncover a lot of different rocks, you know, to find them right now.
That makes perfect sense. And that's something that has to be measured too, right? You hire an employee, you hope and plan that you have the best employee possible and you're making the best decisions. But over time, the data really tells you whether things are working or not. And it seems like today there's more data and more things to measure than you've ever had to measure before. It almost seems like running a business is more complicated than it used to be. Do you think that's true? It's more complicated?
Well, running a business in any situation is very, very difficult. I don't care in the best of times and the worst of times. I mean, you know, there's going to be ups and downs. But, excuse me, but you made a very important point. You know, there's an old axiom in business. You hire the very, very, very best and you terminate when that person doesn't work out quickly. You hire slowly, but you terminate quickly. I mean, the very famous chairman, General Electric, Jack Welch, talked about that. And his, you know, people used to ask him after he retired from GE and he was on his book tour. He wrote a couple books. He said, "What did you do? What did you do to grow GE at that time? You know, at $350 billion market cap. What did you do to do that, to accomplish that?" He says, "I only did two things. Two things." He said, "I hired only the very best, and number two, I held them accountable."
Yeah.
He said, "What makes you think you stop getting a report card after you graduate from high school or college?" You know,
that's a good point.
And if you have a good performance management system in place, you can measure the individual. The individual, most importantly, knows what's expected of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go into so many organizations that we do consulting with, and it's not that people don't want to be excellent, but excellence is not defined for them. So it's sort of like going on a curvy road. They don't know point A to point B.
Yeah.
And when you put in a qualified and a good performance management system, I mean, you lay out that roadmap for that individual. They know what they have to do, just like a syllabus when you were back in college. What do you have to do to get an A? What do you have to do to get a B? And so forth. Same concept is true in business today.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, and I think the generation, the millennial generation, has really brought that to light. And, you know, there's a lot of studies out there about millennials. I'm a millennial. I'm one of the oldest ones.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I think they really held managers accountable. And they held the owners of the businesses accountable to say, hey, if you want me to succeed, you have to show me the path. And they've gotten a lot of, I could say, bad press for that perspective. But it really does bring to light that operations and the processes you have in place determine the success of the organization. So,
Great point. And that's a great point. And what we're seeing today, you're exactly right. You know, everybody thinks, you know, money is the major motivator. You know, throw more money at the person and they'll be more effective. You know, money in surveys can be anywhere from third, fourth, fifth, and sixth in terms of what's important to an individual. And I think what's most important, especially to millennials today, is that concept of flexibility.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be able to, you know, go to their kid's soccer game if it's in the afternoon. They want to make sure they're there for special events. You know, it's working to the grindstone of nine, you know, especially like a young lawyer. Young lawyers would work from in the morning all the way through the night. I know when in investment bankers up in New York, it's, you know, they're working on a big deal. They're around the clock.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and what they're finding today is the next generation coming up, they don't want that.
No.
They want that quality time. That's important time because, you know, you don't want to wake up and there's an old axiom, you know, you don't hear when somebody on their deathbed saying, "I wish I would have spent more time at the office." You know, they wanted to spend more time at home with their family, more time doing the things that they want to do, bringing that cohesiveness together.
Yeah.
So very important.
It's funny, a good friend of mine, who I think you know, Rob Weinholt.
Sure.
He has a phrase that he uses. It's, let's see if I can get it right. He says, "When everything is said and done, what do you want to have said and done?" And it makes people think about those exact things that you said. No one ever says, "I wanted to spend more time at the office."
That's right.
So thinking about our audience, executives, entrepreneurs, and business owners, if someone wanted to start a business today or branch out into a whole nother office in a different city, you know, what's the one piece of advice you would give them?
You got to start with, you got to do what you love. You know, if you do what you love and you're good at, you know, you're really never working. I mean, you're doing what you love and what you would do if you didn't have to work.
Think of
it that way. I mean, not everybody can fall into that situation, but if you want to open a business today and want to have a good chance of being successful, you got to have something there that motivates you, not only for that dollar that we talked about, but something that you want to accomplish as well. Yeah.
So I'm just curious, when you look back at everything that you've accomplished, where do you find the most fulfillment?
With my family. I mean, I owned several companies along the way. And I remember one in particular in the late 80s and early 90s. We were very, very successful. It was a litigation services business. And in fact, we did all the trial work with Oliver North, Schultz, Admiral Poindexter. I mean, the whole Reagan administration was very, very kind to us. You know, we were hired by the court system. We actually did the daily transcript, had a whole staff of court reporters and the litigation support that we offered for the attorneys. And I remember, you know, we had a chance to extend our operation and go to Philadelphia and go to D.C. Hmm. We had a satellite office in D.C., but make a full office, and then in New York as well. And I remember talking over with my wife, and if the kids were little at that time, I knew I wouldn't be home. I'd be traveling. I'd be on the road. And you know, and I remember growing up, you know, I didn't have my father there at my games because he wasn't a part of our lives. And if for me, it was so important. And in my son's room, there was always a picture of every sport that he played in. He played soccer, he played basketball, he played tennis, and he played baseball. I was in every one of those pictures as the coach. And for me, that was so very important. And I point out to him that his dad was there because that's what it's all about. I mean, we just talked about it. That's what it's all about, you know, being there for your loved ones.
It really is. It's about, at the end of the day, what do you want to have said and done? So, well, your book is fantastic, Stronger. There's a lot of motivation in there, a lot of inspiration, stories of resilience. And I know one of the co-authors was a former Navy SEAL. So it's a great read. So anyone that's listening, I hope you get a chance to pick up the book. Where can they find it if they'd like to buy a copy?
Amazon. It's on Amazon. Okay. Look it up. It's right there. It really is a great book. Thank you, Steve.
It is. So, Doug, thank you for being here. It's been an honor and it's been a pleasure. And hopefully we can have you back again soon.
I'd love to. Thank you much.